The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We also spoke to the Minister about local property tax, about VAT, and of course about Trump tariffs. So Liberation Day tomorrow. Danny McCoy is with me, the CEO of IBEC. Before we speak to Danny though, Gerald Storch is on the line. He is the CEO of Storch Advisors. He's a former chair and CEO of Toys R Us and has been vice chair as well of Target. Gerald, you're very welcome to The Hard Shoulder and thank you for speaking to us. What's the prevailing view amongst your colleagues in the business community in the States when it comes to tariffs, the rationale for them and the impact that they're going to have?
Look, I think, most people understand that it's going to happen. I'd say a big part of the country is in a pandemonium. You've seen what's happened in the stock market. But other people are saying, hold on a second, this isn't going to be as bad as people say. And I have to say, I'm in that camp. I think that the sky is not falling. And when you view it from the U.S. perspective and the U.S. consumer, which is something I'm kind of, that's kind of my area of expertise, I think the impact has been grossly overstated. Much of the impact of the tariffs, unfortunately, to people overseas may be borne by the overseas manufacturers. And additionally, there are substitutes for many of the products. And so those will be the products that Americans end up consuming, which is kind of what President Trump wants to see happen. And then more manufacturing will move back to the U.S. But at the end of the day, if a tariff, say, is at 20%, that's 20% on the cost of the good, and it won't be a 20% increase in prices. And so I think by the time it all plays out, it won't have a major impact on the U.S. consumer.
And when you talk about manufacturing ultimately moving back, that's a project that would take several years to come to fruition, wouldn't it?
It totally depends upon the industry. This whole matter started in the first Trump term when he imposed tariffs. And I said then it'd be management malpractice for companies not to diversify their supply chain. Many of them have since then. So there's a lot of flexibility to move product from country to country and back to the U.S. It doesn't mean everything. It really depends on the product. It's quite specific to what's being manufactured. You obviously can't move BMW manufacturing to the U.S. overnight, even though they have built plants here, as you know. So, we'll have to see how it plays out. But again, from a U.S. perspective, I don't think it's as big a deal as it might be to individual countries who export to the U.S. and depend upon the U.S. economy for a big part of their exports.
Despite the fact that, and this is more a question of politics than economics, I guess, despite the fact that Donald Trump, promised when he took office that he was going to, famously reduce the price of eggs. I mean, that became the avatar for the overall price of the grocery basket to a degree. But, there was political capital by him and by his supporters invested in him reducing the cost of living. And even if it's not a 20% increase on the ticket price, as it were, some increase nonetheless might eat into that political capital.
Oh, it's certainly possible. If you look at what happened, though, during the tariffs Trump put on during his first term, which were principally against China, 87% of those tariffs were, in fact, absorbed in China and not passed on. So I think that the inflationary effect of the tariffs he's talking about is somewhat exaggerated in most cases. And so I don't think we're going to see that. Meanwhile, he's talking about a series of moves in terms of tax reductions on households in the U.S. and deregulation. And those are out of sync in terms of timing with the tariffs, which he can do instantly, as opposed to the others, which require legislation. Mm. But his entire program may not be inflationary at all. And I think that's what he's betting on.
Do you get a sense of a coherent strategy emerging from the administration? Because I know there's those, maybe not necessarily in it, but close to it, the Peter Navarros of this world who talk about, making $3 trillion with the back of tariffs and reducing income tax. At the same time, if those companies relocate back to the States, you're not going to make that money. It strikes me they're kind of mutually exclusive outcomes.
Yeah, I think the way that we've seen President Trump work, he starts with general principles and then he makes broad statements and bold strokes. And then his folks work around behind the scenes and make them real plans and make it actionable. And part of what he's doing always is negotiating. He's a real estate guy by trade. I've worked with him a lot in my career as someone who runs retail stores. You're constantly dealing with the other side, with the retail negotiators. And so everything is a deal. Everything's a negotiation. So when he puts something out, that means that's his first offer. And from that first offer, eventually things evolve into something that makes more sense. And so whether it's a coherent plan at the start, it ends up with something coherent.
What do you suspect he hopes it will evolve to?
I think he hopes what he says. The one thing you have to say about this man is he does what he says he's going to do. There's nothing here that he hasn't telegraphed. way in advance and said he's going to do. So I think he believes that he's going to get a deal, and there'll be a deal with other countries, and that he's going to get something for the U.S. out of that deal. So, you know, if it's a reduction in, for example, the EU imposes a 10% tariff on cars entering the EU. So maybe he'll get a reduction in that. Maybe he's, you know, aiming for that. Maybe he'll get something that allows more agricultural exports to the U.S., but something where he can declare that he got a win in exchange for reducing the tariffs that he's put on the company. So I think he's hoping that there's a deal. And that's what's going to happen, by the way, between individual companies, manufacturers. Let's say you make Guinness or something else, right? And you want to export that to the U.S. Well, somehow the cost of these tariffs are going to have to be split between the country, the manufacturers, and then the supply chain in the U.S. And there will be some, you know, divvying up of that, and maybe some price increase where the consumers pay some too. So at the end of the day, everything's a negotiation, I guess, and that's his approach, and that's what we're going to see unfold as we go to coming months.
Gerald, thanks many for speaking to us. Gerald Storch is the CEO of Storch Advisors, former CEO of Toys R Us, and has been vice chair of Target as well. I mentioned Danny McCoy, the CEO of IBEC, who's with me. So Danny, no need to panic, the message from Gerald, although admittedly from the US point of view.
Yeah, look, I've no doubt what Gerald said has got lots of merit in it in terms of experience. This thing is going to be complicated, right? And it's a bad idea. We know it's a bad idea. It's a negative sum game, tariffs, because it's lose-lose. The way Gerald described it is there's no retaliation. You know, people put up with the tariffs that the US put upon, but the EU ain't going to do that, right? They're going to retaliate. So the corollary of everything he said about going to the United States for companies to come back, anybody who wants to service the European market, which is more people, more money, are going to have to come the other direction in this, if they're permanent tariffs, right? And so maybe it is part of a deal. So I think it's up in the air. I think what he said resonates with me. This is not coherent. Tomorrow is not going to be coherent. It's not even clear they'll have their homework done. And this makes it all the more awkward because you don't know if it's going to be consistent, coherent, and will it be lasting tariffs, or are they just part of a deal? And that's called uncertainty. And it's the old hackney phrase, business hates uncertainty. And they freeze. And the world is freezing right now because nobody knows what's going to happen next. And so there's a real downturn emerging while we wait. And we see that in the stock market. And also in the bond market, ultimately, is where the US is going to get punished, because what was a reliable partner has suddenly proved to be anything but reliable, particularly for Europeans when it comes to defence and security. And so I've said this before, President Trump has started something that he may not be able to control. He thinks he's in control, but you know, the US is a big economy. It's the world's most powerful one. At best, it's about 20% in terms of GDP. In terms of trade, it's even less because the consumer is so dominant. It's only about 13% of world trade. That means 87% is outside of there. And if those others start to coordinate with each other and trade with each other, it certainly can damage the United States.
Well, it's interesting because that's a point Pascal Donohue made when I asked him how he suspected all of this might play out. Now, all of the kind of obvious caveats apply to this. But he thought, listen, we are entering into a new era. And he suggested that era would be more intense, localized trade, you know, much more inter-European trade, Ireland much more kind of closely integrated in European markets and trading with countries closer to Europe and more aligned with European values than the United States might become in the future, was the sense I got.
Well, look, a couple of years ago, and I think it was mentioned there about the tariffs on China, and I'd taken the figures at face value, said that 87% of the cost was absorbed by China, not passed on to US consumers. That might be the nature of the products that are being produced, in the sense that they may have been price sensitive, you know, low margin products, toys being an example. Yeah. And so you can't really pass on the price and you absorb it in your profitability. Or also it could have been Chinese companies willing to take the long game and not lose market share in the United States, you know, and that's been in there for the longer haul, which makes it more difficult for the United States vis-a-vis China. And we know in Europe we had this statement about China in the last number of years, the US insisting that we decouple from China.
Mm.
We then, as Europeans, said, well, we're so globalized, decoupling is not a great strategy, might not even be possible. Let's de-risk. It's ironic that we may be coming to that decision about the United States now. We'll never decouple from the United States, too important a market. But de-risking, you know, 50-50 balls from here on in, have to factor in an uncertain United States that could change its mind day in, day out. And also, as a real estater, as a man who's used to defaulting on things, which without much consequence, because real estate can't move, it's not a trade or commodity.
Yeah.
You know, is there a risk factor on US debt now to finance the United States, which depends upon international capital to buy their bonds, to allow them to finance their societies? This is a very complicated game, and probably a bit more complicated than President Trump is being advised about.
I've heard a suggestion that what he is trying to do, or what those around him are trying to do, are to try and, they're trying to recreate the Nixon shock, you know what I mean? Upend the global economy.
Sure.
And then what you have is you have this period of US hegemony, as you did kind of post-Nixon through the Reagan years.
Yeah, well, you know, they have hegemony today, and they're kind of throwing it away because it's going very well. I mean, the one thing I'd like to just maybe highlight tomorrow is what happens the UK versus Europe.
Mm.
Now, this is real time for Ireland with the peace process and no border on the island. So we know that Northern Ireland has been left in the UK customs union, but it's in the European single market. So being in the customs union, if there's no tariffs on the UK, there's no tariffs in Northern Ireland. And if there's tariffs in the EU, there's tariffs in the south of Ireland. There's price differential in all those products. And without a border, the arbitrage, the smuggling, the kind of securing it. This, if the UK don't get tariffs by the US, that rises a possibility. Tomorrow, then, we might be comforted. He does the same thing, looks likely, actually. He'll do the same thing to the UK as the EU.
Yeah.
And if we retaliate as Europeans and the UK say they won't, this creates another problem as well, because goods then that were coming towards Europe from the United States are now going to get hit with a European tariff. And they might say, well, an easier place to dump them is in a non-tariff Britain, in hope to get recycled back into the European Union to a place that has
And that
no
would
border.
Include Northern Ireland from a customs point of view, but then Northern Ireland has access to the single market.
The vulnerability of no border on the island of Ireland comes into sharp relief from two scenarios here. One, if the US treat the UK differently to the EU, and then if the UK retaliate differently or not retaliate at all. This is real-time stuff for Ireland. No consideration for that, clearly, from Trump, and I wouldn't expect it, but we need to be thinking about it.
From the point of view of consumers, then, people listening to this who wonder what impact it all might have in the short term, will it have a severe or noticeable short-term impact? Is this something that's going to be kind of apparent on government balance sheets before it's apparent in the wallet?
So either you continue buying, say from us consumers here, buying US goods now, we retaliate as Europeans, it's either going to be a higher price to you, or you stop getting it, right? You either
so there will be an immediate impact in that sense.
Yeah, there will be an immediate effect. This tariffs are just a negative sum game for the consumers, you know. And if we don't retaliate in Europe, it'll be all on the businesses and the exporters from Europe into the US. But Europe is, you cannot deal with this type of behavior as a bloc like the EU without retaliating. This is game theory. This is tit for tat.
But how then closely will you be watching the nature of that retaliation? Again, this is a question I put to Pascal Donoghue. You know, there's kind of competing camps about how forceful that should be. And then within that, there's competing camps as to how different industries are treated. Obviously, we're very acutely conscious of the pharmaceutical sector. I don't think somebody working in the Skoda plant in the Czech Republic cares about the tariffs on Viagra.
No. Look, it's the old adage, an eye for an eye, got to match.
Yeah.
It's match what's coming at you. And that can have differential consequences for different sectors. It's not a place we'd like to be. But, you know, that adage that attributed to the Taoiseach, this is a time for a blue jersey. It's a European. On the tariffs, we definitely have to be European on this one. Other issues, though, about our corporate tax, about non-tariff barriers, about regulations and so on, countries will have a chance to go off-piste, so to speak. And that's probably where a lot of the action will happen at individual country levels in terms of the regulatory environment. And the US is very keen, particularly on digital, to roll back on the AI Act and so on, GDPR.
I guess the other aspect of all of this, and it's much more abstract in people's minds, so it's easier to talk about the Viagra being manufactured in Cork and being shipped in the United States, is the IP trick that we've been able to play since 2014 in this country. It's been hugely profitable from a corporate tax point of view. So for people at home, basically kind of US research and innovation creates an idea or a formula for something. They shift the intellectual property to Ireland and then we license it back from the States. Nothing moves, but we end up with the tax receipts. Is that under threat?
Well, you see, on that particular game is that this is where Trump believes that we are running a trade deficit with the US because it's on the goods. He's only looking at goods.
When
you look at those licenses going back and the royalties that are paid from that intellectual property, the royalties back to those US companies is hugely substantial. It then gets distributed to their shareholders and through the equity market. And all that's left here, all in inverted commas, is a corporate tax, which in our context is huge.
Yeah.
In the context of the United States, it's meaningful, but it's not huge.
Yeah.
So it's a complicated game. And if you only think about it in goods, which Trump is, he's missing probably where a lot of the value is in the services. And that's where I think the next shoe to drop, which the Commerce Secretary Lutnick is on about, it's not about the tariffs, it's actually about the profits and where those profits are ending up.
All right. Well, listen, we'll talk again, I'm sure. Danny McCoy, CEO of IBEC. Before Danny, we spoke to Gerald Storch, CEO of Storch Advisors.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.